Okay. Hi, everyone. How's it going? It's going good? It's your last session of Tech Ed. Can you believe it? You've made it. You've survived this long to get here. And I know that's not always easy with all of the different events and parties and sessions. You're kind of like, oh, do I really want to sit through one more session? So I really appreciate all of you that came today. I'm Andy O'Donnell. I'm a technical product manager on the Office 365 team. And I'm going to walk through a little bit of the Office 365 for Education and really go into two main parts. About half the session is just about what Office 365 is, what's part of the service, what's the offering for education. And the other half of my session is really focused around customers who are on live at EDU. So then those are my session objectives, that you understand what Office 365 is, and then you understand the transition from live at EDU, or I should say the upgrade from it. So how many of you are live at EDU customers currently? All right, over half the room. That's been what I saw at the last Tech Ed as well. So hopefully that information will be relevant for you. So let's just take a quick look at the agenda. So I'll go into sort of just what is Office 365, kind of take a walkthrough through the admin portal, since that's the part that you'll probably be the most interested in seeing. Then talk a little bit about some of the scenarios that it enables for education with the additions of things like Link and SharePoint and how that can help students and a faculty collaborate together. And do a little bit of a demo there showing some of that functionality. And then we'll spend a good amount of time just talking about the changes and the migration from Live at EDU. And I won't be offended if you leave during that point if you're not on Live at EDU today. Although at the very end, I'll talk a little bit about our service update strategy and how 365 has been getting more and more updates as time goes on. One of the great things about a service, of course, is the fact that we can update it throughout its time period. So what does the service really mean to you? I think one of the big ones is no more patching. It's really where servers are being hosted by Microsoft. And so it takes out a lot of the higher, a lot of the maintenance that no one really sees that goes into maintaining them. It means that you don't have to get new hardware. You're able to continue using the hardware that you have for the services you have, but for the additional upgrades, you're not going to have to be upgrading hardware, or as you bring more and more students onto the service, there's no additional hardware that will be required. You'll get faster updates than typically. A lot of times we see universities and organizations, both educational and commercial organizations, they take typically 5 years to deploy a lot of new products. So sometimes they're skipping versions. They're going from a 2003 to a 2010 version. That's quite common. But with the service, we're able to update you much, much faster on the back end, so that you're always getting some of the latest and greatest technologies for your use. And for example, those of you who are on live at EDU, you may not know this, but it's actually running on the same servers as Office 365 already. It's just a slightly different SKU, so it works. We give different variables that you get, like mailbox size, et cetera, but it's still running on the same servers that Office 365 is. And then, of course, one of the other major benefits of having the service is that you're able to scale to new users very, very quickly. So if all of a sudden you decide you want to onboard a new class, which obviously for the education audience, it's very, very important that you can just quickly throw on an additional 5,000 students when you need to. That's one of the benefits, of course, of using an online service. So let's just talk quickly about what the components of Office 365 is. So Live at EDU and previous education offerings were really focused just on email. But with Office 365 for Education in the A2 plan, which is the free plan, and I'll show that, I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second, the majority one, you get the three online services of SharePoint Online, Exchange Online, and Link Online. And so that really means that in addition to the Exchange Online, where we're doing things like upgrading the mailbox size to 25 gigabytes and giving everyone a personal archive, and you have all of the goodness of Exchange, you're also getting SharePoint Online, which acts as a much more, compared to, say, the SkyDrive that existed there today, SharePoint Online provides a much more sophisticated portal experience for collaboration, where you can have things like classroom sites, where each teacher could maintain their own set of sites for their classes and have students turn documents in, and it enables much easier sharing, et cetera. And there's also things like My Site, so people can have their own personal pages for storing documents as well. Students can have that and then share with, for example, other students, the class projects, et cetera. And there's also the ability to set up some extranet sites as well. And then Link Online today enables the ability for computer-to-computer video, voice, and sharing capabilities, so desktop sharing. Also has some great recording functionality, so I've found this really useful. When I've taken a look at it, it's extremely useful. You can record a session and then go back and go through the different slides as the person's talking. And I think back to my lectures and how much better it would have been if I'd had a Link Online recording where I could have jumped to a section very easily and heard what the professor had to say. There's also Windows at Live federation with the Link Online so that you're able to communicate with other systems as well. And then the fourth part of Office 365 that I have up here is Office. Now, for EDU customers, if they want to get Office through Office 365, it is an additional cost. It requires upgrading to the A3 plan, which, again, I'll just show in a minute. But that it is an additional cost, but it is a good way to get Office. And again, because it is Office as a service, that means that as we push out additional updates to the Office client, those are automatically included in the price. It is not, I always get this question, I got it probably 100 times down at the booth this week. It is not Office in a browser. When you think of the Office web apps, those run today on top of SharePoint Online, and those are the V1 version of our Office applications in a browser. Office 365 is not just Office in a browser. It has the Office desktop client, but it is a traditional MSI that is installed on top of Windows. And basically, the only difference between the 2010 version and the Office that is included in Office 365 is the activation model. So instead of setting up using Mac keys or setting up a KMS server, what you're doing is you're actually authenticating that client against the cloud. And what's interesting is that this allows us to do a per-user license. So now it used to be for the last 25 years, we've done all of our licensing for Office on per device, right? You had to pay for each computer for a license of Office. What Office 365 allows us to do, because we're able to then authenticate, no, that's that person, that user, we're able to give them five installs of Office so they can install it on five different devices, which, considering the number of devices that are proliferating and how users want to be able to access their documents and work from anywhere, it's a really beneficial, and you'll continue to see more integration there. For example, already today we have, Link. We've released Link Mobile across iOS, Android, and Windows Phone, and using your Office 365 credentials, you can then log into that client and it authenticates you. And so you can imagine how that's going to become more and more useful as you see more and more devices get out there and have Office that way. So those are really the components. Any questions on just on this high level offering? Yes. Can you please specify what you mean by the student option? Right, so that's where the university has a master contract. So the question is how does this work in conjunction with a university level agreement where the students then purchase through the university that copy? Right. 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 Yes, this is a third offering. That's right. This is offering it. And then this offering, to differentiate from the two you were just referring to, which is where you would buy a perpetual license the student would get, and the students can always buy their own copy. This one is attached to their IDs, and so as soon as they leave and you deprovision their account at the university and they're no longer a student, it would stop working, right? Because it's because it checks in and does a validation that their account is still good with Office 365. It's not a perpetual license. It is part of the subscription. Yes? That's correct. It's only about the education or also commercial? For Office 365, the service offerings for education and commercial, from a technical sense, they are nearly identical. So it is the five devices per user is a universal of Office Professional Plus. So the Office that you get through Office 365, that's a universal, the five devices. So here is just breaking down a little bit of the actual SKUs and how those work. And so one thing I wanted to point out is when you're upgraded from Live at EDU, what you get upgraded to is Exchange Plan 1. That's where you actually end up. You don't automatically get upgraded to A2. Even though A2 is free, it is still something that you have to then add to your account. You have to add that to and provision your users onto it. So this is what you get migrated to, is the Exchange Plan 1. And now Exchange Plan 1 is a component of Office 365 Plan A2. So it's a one component, but it's just the Exchange part of it. And a common question is, yes, for Exchange, you do get alumni. You are able to give alumni lifetime mailboxes on Exchange online. And so then, as you can see with Plan A3, one of the differences is that you get Office, the rich client, as well as you get Exchange Plan 2, which has more advanced features for legal hold and compliance and archiving. And then Exchange Plan 4 is if you need the on-prem VoIP solution for Link. So you want to have Link be able to talk to landlines and make that connection. That's the additional servers that you get access to. An important thing with the licensing around A2, or just any of the Office 365 offerings, is that when your user gets a license for, say, A2, like let's just take a professor, and let's say you do a hybrid environment and you have your students on Office 365, you know, in Microsoft's cloud, and you keep your professors on-prem Exchange server, right? You don't have to, once everyone is licensed for the A2, that includes access to on-prem servers as well. Those aren't separate. So once you still would have to get the Windows server license separately, but once you're licensed on Office 365, it includes access to on-prem servers. So if you have some SharePoint in the cloud and some SharePoint on-prem, you're not going to have to pay for two licenses. Once you have the 365, that then gives the client access license to your users. So that's a very nice benefit. So now we'll talk a little bit about the service itself. First, Office 365 really has some great tools to help administrators take advantage of the service. One is the ADFS integration for if you're using, say, the SSO toolkit today. That's sort of the evolution of it, so we can support SAML and do federated single sign-on identities. We have rule-based access so that people can delegate out the different types of administrators in your organization. So if you need to just have, say, a support role that only has access to the ability to, say, reset people's passwords, or if you want to have a billing administrator to manage your licenses and assigning users, all of those are possible through the admin console, as well as you also still have your traditional, if you're used to, say, the Exchange Online that you have today, you still have the traditional Exchange Online roles as well. So you still have all of that is in the Exchange panel as well. So you haven't lost any of that flexibility around role-based access. And then the other is that a lot of work has been done around making sure that we have remote PowerShell against the service so that you can use a lot of those power tools to automate your provisioning, automate your license assigning, and a lot of the other things you might want to do to your service. And so I don't know, did anyone stop by the Office 365 booth and see the giant chair we had set up with the three monitors? Anyone check that out? We were originally using that. We had a nice little PowerShell script going on there before they turned it into another show there with some of the game. But the PowerShell is a great way to automate a lot of the uses of Office 365 and to really control your service and get insight into what's going on. Next thing I want to talk about is how Office 365 is trustworthy. The other thing there is we have a lot around privacy. We are not scanning your data or doing anything with your data. Your data is yours. And we also, one of the great things about how we architected Office 365 is we really isolated the need for any of our service administrators or any of the developers in Redmond who are patching and updating the servers. We're at the application level, and they don't need to access the data to make those sorts of changes. So we really respect your privacy, and if there is ever some sort of circumstance where we have to access the data because of trying to follow up on some sort of service dashboard health bug that you've reported to us, then we will give you a full transparent audit request that you can that you will get back report showing you who had access, what was done, etc. Again, that's only if there's an extreme situation and you have to request that of us. The next thing, of course, is that around security compliance, Office 365 is always trying to obtain the latest and the highest security standards around there. We have ISO 27001, SAS 70, or as it was renamed, SSAE 16 recently. Have FISMA and HIPAA in the U.S., and here in Europe we have the EU model clauses and EU safe harbor as well. So again, that just means that you'll know that your data stays within a region and isn't being stored in another region. And then the last thing is just around reliability. Around reliability, we really have geo-redundant data centers. Here in Europe, we have one of our data centers in Dublin and one in Amsterdam here. And those are the two that we publicly disclose. There are other data centers as well in Europe, but those are the two that we talk about. And the idea being that we always keep four copies of your data within a data center, and then we also have every data center has a mirror data center, so that if a data center has a full failover, maybe it loses power or the network goes down, it fails over to the next geo redundant in that data center in that geo, so that way that you always have your data in multiple places, and if there's no single point of failure that way. So the dates on these ones aren't correct. But these were the other two sessions that happened earlier this week. And there was also North America versions of these as well. And so if you want to get more information around Security Privacy Trust, that happened at 8:30 this morning. Did anyone attend that one, the Security Privacy Trust 365? Yes, a couple of you. Okay, great. So you got a full hour of more in-depth into that. And then there's also a session in North America around service reliability and disaster recovery. And that session really goes into how we architected our services and our data centers to really be resilient to just about any type of disaster. So next, from an administration standpoint, I want to just quickly talk a little bit about the moving to the cloud, the transition. So for the half of you that currently aren't on live at EDU, you're probably looking at this project a little bit differently. You're having to look at it from, it's more greenfield. And so there's some important options to consider around how you want to move. The first option to really think about is around the workload migration flexibility. So you can choose which workloads you want to move when. You could actually implement, say, Link Online. Let's say you don't have any IAM or presence. You could implement that and integrate that service into your environment first while you still are running, say, your mail on-prem, and test out 365 and see if that works for you. So if there's areas that are easier to move first, because you currently don't have a solution in place, such as a link-style solution, IAM and voice, that can be a really nice way to test the service out and start that migration process and get going a lot faster. Of course, if you're just interested in doing email, you can just set that one up and jump right into doing the Exchange migration. But there is a lot of flexibility. You don't have to take all of the services at the exact same time. You can just enable certain services as you want to light them up for your users. You can also have situations where, let's say you only want to give link to, you want to do everyone's mail, and you just want to give link to your faculty and staff. That's completely possible as well. It's just about how you assign, how you turn on the features for the users. So there's a lot of flexibility about how you do that onboard and migration onto the service. The next is around the user migration flexibility. I already sort of talked about this a little bit, just about how you can have a real hybrid environment, and you have a lot of flexibility in how you want users to consume which services. So, you know, in those last couple examples, it's just about you can move at the rate you want to move people to the service or not. And you can also, if you set up a true coexistence exchange, you can also move people back. So if you, for example, move someone online and for whatever reason you need to bring them back on premise, you're able to do that and move that mailbox back on premise to your on-prem server. So that gives you, again, a lot of flexibility around that. And I already talked about the licensing, about how once you have the Office 365 agreement in place, you're then covered for both the on-prem and the online servers for Exchange, SharePoint, and Link. So it makes it very easy for universities to manage it in that way. All right. So here's just a couple examples of education institutions that have implemented either live at EDU or Office 365. And the examples really serve more just, I just like talking about how, you know, some, they were more greenfield and it made sense for them to move to a pure cloud type offering where they didn't want to keep anything on-prem anymore. They didn't even want to do their Active Directory. Some, it's more, the hybrid environment made a lot more sense. They wanted to be able to keep their faculty and staff on-prem and then move just their students to the cloud, and that was really the best solution for them given their requirements in their institution. And then the final one was just the ability, they were worried about being able to quickly add students. Their current infrastructure that they had in place, they weren't able to onboard the new classes as they were growing as an institution. And so Office 365 gave them that scalability to quickly onboard an additional 2,000, 3,000 students each semester as they needed to, as they were growing very, very quickly. And so just some examples of how customers are using and implementing Office 365 for education. So I think people are taking photos. It's okay. The slides are available afterwards to download too. They're actually already available because they're on the North America. If you go to Channel 9, you can download them today. So now, very important topic, identity. Did any of you go to Ross Adams' identity session earlier this week? Anyone? No? Okay. So I have one slide on this topic. He has an entire, again, hour and 15 minutes on the identity and all of the options available there. So I highly recommend you listen to that session when you're ready to go into this point. But I just want to cover sort of at a high level how to think about identity with Office 365. So the first is, If you don't worry about having a single ID for your on-prem AD solution and Office 365, you can look at just a pure Microsoft Online identity only, and that's where the users would just have their own login for the online, their own password, and you wouldn't even have to do any syncing. So this would mean you would have to do a manual adding of users, right? That you would have to upload a CVS file with all the users and their data and then activate them. And you could automate this with like a PowerShell process if you wanted to. But it means that they're completely separate, that you're managing them in the cloud. The data that you have in the cloud isn't going to sync in any way with your on-prem solution, and they're just completely separate worlds. It can be a fast way if you just want to do a pilot group with, you know, 25, 50 users. It can just be a really fast way just to pilot it out, because you would just have to, change the MX record, and you could have those users in the cloud for that. But again, there's no syncing back and forth between your AD and your on-prem. The next is where you want to have some synchronization. You want to just connect it to your on-prem AD source. And you're able to then use the DirSync tool, which you get from Office365.com, and you're able to synchronize all of your objects up to the cloud. There's a lot of guidance on how to set up DirSync. There's some special considerations if you have above 50,000 AD objects. You have to just put in a service request to allow you to go over that. We just put in a throttling mechanism to protect the service, so you just have to let them know, you know, service requests need to get an AD exception, and you're going to add, you know, how many thousands of objects. Once you get above 250,000 objects, you also have to make sure that you have a server. Your AD DirSync server on your end has to be running. Has to be able to handle that, so you have to make sure you have a lot of RAM and hard drive space. There's some scaling issues there. And around DirSync, if you go above, I believe, 50,000 objects, you also need to make sure you're running DirSync on top of a full instance of SQL. You can't use SQL Express. So just a couple of things to be aware of there as you're doing DirSync. And then the final option, really, and this is the one that we see the larger organizations implement, is some form of single sign-on. And so with Office 365 for education, we have the DirSync with ADFS. We are also supporting for education Shibboleth. It is currently in a, I would say, beta phase where we're working with institutions to get the documentation down and get the process really finalized. But if you are interested in that, you should work with your Microsoft representative, and they can get you in that beta pilot to start testing out a Shibboleth Federation implementation. So in this final one for the single sign-on, what you're doing is you're still using DirSync to sync your users to Office 365 and enabling them. And then you're doing a federation with your on-prem AD. So again, either ADFS or Shibboleth. And that's that, of course, because then what happens is when the user logs in, it actually, first Office 365 sees, oh, this is a federated account. It goes back to your server. So if you do a single sign-on federation, you have to stand up highly available servers that we can, so because it will become the single point of failure because people wouldn't be able to authenticate. So it's going to go from the Office 365 .com portal to your on-prem server for federation. It's going to then use the user's credentials, check the person will log in against your server, get a token, and send that token back to Office 365 to validate the authentication. And so it will provide a single sign-on experience, though, for the clients and all the web experience. And if you're using SSO Toolkit today, this is your replacement option for it. So any general questions about this? There's more in-depth stuff online, but if there's any just general questions about these three options, happy to take those. No? Everyone's good? Yeah? Around ADFS, yeah? No, it's not on top of ADFS. It's using Shibboleth. You still have to have AD in AD, but it's working independently. It's working as a separate federation service. Okay. All right. So we'll just go over now and take a look at Office 365. All right, so this is the admin portal. I've logged in here into your Office 365 into the portal, which you can see here. You've got some of the admin shortcuts up at the top, things like resetting passwords, adding new users, creating service requests, assigning licenses. From this front overview page, this is where you can then log into the administration centers for your various services. So you have Exchange, Link, and SharePoint, as well as the Office apps, and then over on the left-hand side here, you can see the different areas within the portal that admin can go to. Setup, so that's all of the help to get you onboarded onto the service, into the management of your users and domains, into the licensing, and the support area. This is where, of course, you do service requests and health dashboard information. So we'll just take a look at that. We'll go over and just take a look at some of the users. So here you can see the user IDs that we have. Now these users, you can see that they are they all have a little person. This means that they're cloud ID only. It would become two arrows doing a sync if it was synced with the DirSync, so with an on-prem Active Directory service, and so you would enable these users. You can do things like click on them and edit them or reset their password, delete them, etc. You can also have security groups, and you can manage your domains through here. So here you can see we verified, KentosoCorp.com and KentosoHotels.com. So you can actually dig in and get some of the details around those domains. You can see here that how the MX record has been set up. You can get the addresses for the link connection and the DNS for those. You can also go into the properties and do troubleshooting if you're having issues setting the domain up. Then if we go to subscriptions, you can see the licenses that you have available. You can see how many have been assigned, not assigned, how you're using them. And then you can purchase the additional add-ons through this portal as well. And this would also be where you could go and purchase additional free A2 sites, right? So if you just need more free A2 licenses, you just would go in and say, okay, I need this many more and add those to your account. So again, it's just about adding it to the account. You do it through that portal. Then the support section, we've got some of the things like the diagnostic tool, so that it helps you look for issues with your service. If there's common issues that are bubbling up in the community or in the support, those are surfaced here in your portal. Here's where you file service requests. So this is a good one to know. This is where you would put in that service request I was talking about if you have more than 50,000 AD objects and you need to get an exception. So you would create a new request here. And you would go through all of your issues. This also is where if you wanted to have now service requests, those through this portal, the turnaround time is 48 hours. If you have an emergency issue, again, Office 365 for Education A2 comes with phone support, and so we always say you should call us and get on the phone with an engineer and get your problem resolved faster that way. But if you're just doing your maintenance type service, this service request portal is a great way to handle that. Here's the service health dashboard. So here is where you can see all of the different services. You can also subscribe to this RSS feed so that you're getting instant updates if there's any degradation. And this service health dashboard, unlike the previous versions that we had for BPOS and LiveEDU, they were not specific to your service. They were sort of an all-up. They are now specific to your exact tenant. So if there's issues with your tenant, those are surfaced here in this dashboard. And for example, you can see as we expand these, all of the different features of functionality within a service. And you can see if there has been an issue here, you can see for SharePoint Online, there was a service degradation today. It gives you a play-by-play of all of the information that's available of what's going in into the service, what's being looked at, and what the expected time for resolution is. So again, it's all about providing a lot of transparency to you, the admin, so you understand what's going on inside your service. And then the last area I just want to point out is the planned maintenance, so that if there are planned maintenances, they get scheduled and you're notified here of what is going on and when those are being done, and if there's going to be any impact to you or your users, that would show up here as well. So you're able to keep an eye on what's going on from that perspective. The other area I just wanted to jump over into here was just show you, this is the Exchange Online administration. So this should look fairly familiar to those of you who have used Live at EDU. Here you can see you have your mailboxes, your distribution groups, external contacts, and of course there's the migration tab that can help as well if you connect with an on-prem CAS server, for example. Here are the roles in auditing, so you can have, again, the different types of administrator roles inside of your Exchange environment. Under the mail control, you can do things like set up your rules, so this is if it's been sent outside the organization. From here, you can also go into your forefront and manage your anti-spam settings for your organization. And then some of these retention and generally some of these become more enabled with some of the higher-end Exchange Online SKUs. And then the other area, of course, that's very powerful with the Exchange Online is, of course, your device management. So here you can see if there's been quarantined devices based on your rules, and you can set device policies for different groups and types of users. So it's a good way to get an idea of what your users have and set the appropriate policies for those as needed within your organization. So now let's jump back over. Okay, so now we went through some of the admin experiences, the things that you want to think about as you're planning your migration, and what some of the benefits and features of Office 365 are. Now I just want to do a little bit more of the end user experience, and so we'll just go through, talk a little bit about how SharePoint can be used for digital classrooms, and how with Link as well you can record those sessions. Group projects, how SharePoint really enables the ability for students to work together on the same documents, save those documents, and then turn them in to their professors. There's a lot of the note-taking capabilities of OneNote, the fact that we've released OneNote across iPhone, iPad, Android, Symbian, Windows Phone. We now have really good coverage of the note-taking across all of those devices, as well, of course, in the web app and the PC, and the fact that Office 365 really then enables anywhere access to those resources because you're accessing it through the web. So we'll go over here to back to our computer. And take a look at that. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you noticed, I was using Firefox. I actually am going to be using a lot of different browsers. I was doing this whole in Firefox because Office 365 is built on open web standards, HTML and JavaScript and CSS. So we support all of the four major browsers of Safari, Internet Explorer, Chrome, and Firefox. So here you have from a user perspective, where they're just seeing they no longer have the admin tab up at the top. When they log in, they just get this home screen. They can also set a default login if they'd prefer to go to, say, their mail on login. But here they can quickly jump into their inbox, calendar, contacts, or into the team site. Now let's just open up team site. So here you can see that this is the OWA experience. So this is the OWA client that comes with Office 365. You can see here a lot of integration. You have things like the built-in link integration, so you can see the users the person has marked as contacts. You have full right-click functionality, so you can actually get context-sensitive right-click menus with inside the browser. So you can start up a chat within the browser here. You have the conversation view. You have, of course, the reminders for the different meetings. Right within the browser, you have drag and drop functionality. So you could actually take items and drag them into other folders for usage there. Again, all in the web browser. And you also have conversation view in the web browser as well. So there's been a lot of additions to make OWA as full-featured compared to previous versions. They also brought in the photos. If there were photos loaded in here, this was actually an update that shipped after after it was released. There's also the ability to look at documents from within the web browser as well from OWA. So that was added to Office 365, but it isn't available on-prem. So there's certain features like that we've shipped. Now I want to go over to I'll jump over to the calendar real quick. So here you can see the calendar view from within OWA, and you can open up items and, of course, make changes to those, update the meeting, et cetera, all from within. And you can add link calls as well, and you have tasks and contacts in here. So I'm going to go ahead and close that. And then here we have a SharePoint site, and we've just done like a quick model mock-up of something that education institution could do. They could put things like their school calendar on the page. There could be different announcements that people could click on and dive into. And then you have things like the persons could add what their classes are across their nav bar, and their clubs that they might be a part of as well. So here, if we go into this class, this could be managed by, for example, a professor, and they'd have the information for it. They could have things like the class calendar, so when it's scheduled, when their quizzes are, when the exams are. And then, of course, for what's neat about this is then a student, all they have to do is go up to calendar here, and then they can actually connect to Outlook, and they can connect this, or they could have alerts for certain calendar items. But if they connect it to Outlook, they could connect all their classes and then have one view in their Outlook and OWA that would show them all of their different classes and assignments that are due without them having to put them in manually themselves. They could have all of that in one view there. So it makes a really nice, easy way to integrate the different classes. And yet, then if the professor changes one of those calendar items, it automatically updates it on all of their students' calendars. So it's a really, really great way to keep people connected and in touch right from within these team sites. So then if we go over to libraries, here we have things like class resources. So that here we can store different documents that might be related, such as the syllabus, or some of the class lectures, for example, inside of this, and also submissions. So this could be where the different assignments, where the students can drop them off. And you can do things like set up a folder so that once a document has been submitted, there can't be changes to it, right? So that would, of course, prevent students from trying to do something funny, like editing the document after they had turned it in. So you could set up those kind of rules on a document library to make it. And then you could also make it so that when it's submitted, the other students couldn't see it, except things like that. So going back into the class resources here, I want to show just some of the functionality you get. So if we click on this Marketing 101, one of the great things about how we integrated the web apps with SharePoint is that you obviously get the ability to just quickly get a preview of your documents right inside the web browser. You don't have to wait like the previous versions of SharePoint to download the document to your desktop. You're able just to get a nice preview right inside the browser. Again, just using JavaScript, HTML, and CSS, we're able to do all of this rendering for the different web apps right here within it. And then it's easy. You can either go to edit in browser, or you can open it in PowerPoint, which is what I want to do here. So if I want to make edits in the rich client, I'm going to go ahead and just open that in PowerPoint. And so it's actually downloading that from the SharePoint site. Now notice that someone else was actually in this document making changes to it. And so you can see here one of the great features of Office 365 is the ability for users to do co-authoring and have multiple users editing a document together. So you can see how you have the users. Notice you get their link contacts, so you can see their profile. You can actually click on them. You could start a conversation or call them to see what part they're working on. So we can go ahead and send that. And then you'll notice that we can go then over to that user. And so here you see, notice we've switched to a Mac. And so what I'm showing you now is, say, we know that in the universities and education institutions in general, there's a pretty high prevalence of Macintosh users. And so one of the great things about Office 365 is that we have support for Mac users on Office 365, as well as when you combine that with Office for Mac 2011, you have a really great experience, and you can do a lot of the same functionality. So we have, for example, here Link. You can see, again, you have a lot of the similar buttons. You get their contact photos across. You're able to turn that into a call or a video chat. And they're able to, again, of course, communicate that way. And then if we actually go to the document, you can see, again, the same thing on the Mac. You get the presence of the two users. You're able to see, and then if they started actually editing different slides, you would get the slide would become locked off, and you could know who was working on it and make changes. And then, of course, you save those changes back up. For the Mac, they have this handy tool, the document connection tool, that allows you to have your different SharePoint sites. And then so you're actually editing the ones that are on the server. If I go back to Windows here again, the way that you can always tell is notice one, you have the save button up here. You have the little double arrows on it, so you know, again, it's connected to a 360 or a SharePoint store. And then for users, they can always tell their document is if it's being stored in the cloud by based on here, the location. You can see here that we've got our university.sharepoint.com and then the site that's attached to it. And so that would be, of course, the link you could send someone. You could send the link easily if you needed to share or collaborate on that document. So just going back over to the Mac here, one thing I wanted to show quickly was that we do have, with Office for Mac 2011, we do have Outlook. So we now have much better support of the different Exchange servers and features and functionality within a rich client on the Mac. You can see here that we're connected to the account. You also get the conversation view, just like you would on the PC. And you have all of your familiar things like calendar, contacts, et cetera, within it. And we brought the ribbon across. So users who are moving between the two platforms have the ribbon. Yes, question? Office for Mac is not currently included in the Office 365 Pro SKUs. It is a separate thing currently. So then we'll just go ahead and take a look here. So we've shown you that. And we'll minimize the Outlook. We talked a little bit about this. Again, notice how you can go to the different areas inside of the SharePoint site from within this tool. One of the nice things is both for the Mac and for the PC, because we have the two tools respectively, if, for example, a user is working on a document and they go offline, they get on a plane or their internet connection drops or whatever, we save then a local copy into the cache for the syncing. So the next time they get an internet connection, we will then sync up the changes to those documents. And one of the nice things about switching to the OpenXML formats a few years ago is we're now able to do delta syncing, where we just take the delta, the changes to the XML different from the file that's on the server, and sync those. So this sort of collaboration is very, very easy on the network, because you aren't pulling down the entire document each time. So that enables a much better integration, a much better synchronization story with documents, and being very, very frugal with the network. And the last thing I wanted to just point out, I've shown you that we have Link on the Mac and all that. Last thing I just want to point out was, one of the other features that was brought back, we took it out in Office for Mac 2008, but in 2011 we added back the support for VBA in Excel. So that was just a very common ask, and so that allows, again, much, much better integration for users to collaborate across different platforms and work together. So that is back in Office for Mac 2011. So with that, we'll switch back to the PowerPoint. Okay, so now we're going to spend the next bit going through some of the considerations and things to think about if you're upgrading from Live at EDU. And then the final section, we'll just talk a little bit about some of the updates that have come to 365 over the last year and how we're going to continue to update the service. Yep, it's all good. I knew this part that some people just doesn't apply to, so it's not as interesting. So here is the timeline for the upgrade. So What we've got is right now there's a manual opt-in time period where if you're interested in moving early and you're currently on Live at EDU, we can get you working with someone sooner to try and do it. But there's a lot of manual processes, particularly around password reset for users who you want to move to Office 365. You're not going to be able to keep the same password. You're going to have to manually reset it, and you're going to have to give them that password before you do the migration so that they have it, so the first time they're able to log in. So there's a lot of pre-communication that has to go into it at this point in time to do an upgrade. Starting around September, October, they're hoping to have better support for the upgrades with the customers from the OL sync, and they're hoping that then it will be at least be you won't have to give them their password beforehand. It just will be the first time they go to log in, they'll have to then reset their password. But it'll be automated. The user will be able to do it themselves without having to have any communication from the IT department. And then the other thing here is just around that this again will be the opt-in. We're not exactly sure how many will want to move in that time period, particularly since we think that will go into effect right as schools are starting back up for the fall semesters. And then the plan right now is to have a hands-free upgrade experience for those of you on live at EDU starting around December, January time frame, where we will, again, we call this an upgrade because the data is already in the correct data centers. It's just a matter of doing the switch flip so that it's considered a 365, not a live at EDU account. This is when they're planning to just have that hands-free migration where people's passwords will continue to work. You'll still have to do the new integration where you have to set up a DirSync server and sync your users across, but you won't have to do things like the manual password reset at that point in time. We will schedule people, but you will have the ability to reschedule and choose a different time that works better for you, as we can imagine. The times in the summer are probably going to be the most in demand when students and faculty aren't as many of them around. So get one of those if that's what you're looking for early. Here we can talk a little bit just about some of the upgrade system requirements. The one for education institutions, we haven't seen this one to be a big blocker, but it does require at least Internet Explorer 7 to use the new OWA and SharePoint. Again, that's been more of an issue with large government institutions that are still using Internet Explorer 6. For the desktop, it needs to be Office 2007 or newer for the Exchange support. Office 2003 users can connect via POP and IMAP. Obviously, that's not a great experience, but if they want to be using a desktop client, then they need to be on 2007 or newer to get the Exchange functionality. From a provisioning standpoint, if you're using ILM or OL Sync, you have to, as I mentioned before, you have to use DirSync now to connect your AD to the Office 365 AD system or our cloud ID system. Right now, there is an early option. Again, I mentioned sort of how we had the beta for the Shibboleth. We also have a beta for people that want to connect non-AD Active Directory sources. If they want to bring those in, we do have a system where you can use the new FIM, Forefront Identity Management tool, and you can use that with a management agent to create a custom set of fields that you then sync up to our system. But it's very much beta because it's extremely custom to each customer. Everyone has a completely different implementation. It's a very manual process. But if that's something that you need, definitely ask your rep about getting into that program so you can work through that. And then the single sign-on, again, I mentioned that earlier. If you want to have that, we're retiring SSO Toolkit, and you'll have to do either Shibboleth or what we recommend is ADFS for your federation to enable the single sign-on. And I'll talk a little bit more about the URL later. This is sort of the what are the requirements and the things that happen at for the different people at the phases. Basically around, you know, I mentioned the passwords. So right now, if you were to go, you have the temporary passwords that have to be handed out manually to the end users beforehand. Starting again in around September, October, you're going to have the self-service. And then passwords are going to be copied from the Windows Live to Office 365 if you wait until the beginning of 2013. You'll have to do DirSync for pretty much all of these across the thing, although there should be a better OL Sync cleanup tool available at a later time to help with that. And then for the single sign-on, again, this slide's more for your reference. I've talked about these, how you have to move off of the SSO toolkit. Any questions about the timeline and what we're looking at for moving users? Yep. You first, and then you.
One question on migration. We, until Live EDU, actually blocked the creation of password when entities under our main
Yep.
There it says that live services are decoupling and taking ownership.
Yep.
You didn't provide a mechanism that allows us to force them back off of our students' domain.
When you say forces them off, what do you mean exactly? So their new username you will be creating with your Office 365 account. Universities, yeah, right. So what happens? Okay, your question's answered in my next section. We split them up. So let me just get to that. And then you had a question, sir. Yep. No, you can't run them in parallel. So the question is, if you have new onboarding students, should we try and onboard them into Office 365? No, just onboard them into your current live at EDU, and then just wait for the manual upgrade. That'll be a lot better experience actually for you. Okay, and then we'll come back to your question around that. So this is just the roles and responsibilities for you if you're looking to upgrade, what the different areas are for Microsoft versus Live EDU. One thing you can do, the first bullet kind of up there, is if you have very, very low Live EDU implementation and you want to go to 365 right now, you can delete your Live EDU account. Because the reason you would do this is because, you see, we've already reserved all of your namespaces for your institutions in Office 365, because we didn't want someone to come along and try and take your namespace in Office 365 servers. So we reserved those so that we would, when we do the upgrade, that your tenant has the exact same namespace in Office 365, right? So that's why if you were to go and try and create an account with university.edu, today, and you have a Live at EDU, it would fail because we've already reserved that namespace. So that's just, if you haven't really implemented Live at EDU, that is an option. You could delete it and go sign up for 365. The other thing that's really important is we've noticed a lot through some of the early accounts we've been updating, we've noticed a lot of people don't have accurate information in the service management portal. So please, please go in there and update your university information. If we can't get a hold of an admin, we can't schedule your migration. And this is, sometimes partners set up the accounts 5 years ago with dummy information, and no, there isn't a contact phone number or email for the actual admin for their university. Did you have a question, sir? Oh, okay. So that's very, very important. It sounds simple and minor, but when Microsoft's trying to get in contact with someone to let them know that we're scheduling your migration, we've had some interesting, this is a fake number in the field. So, it's very important. I've already talked about a lot of the password things and the SSO toolkit. And then the other thing is from the SMP portal, which I'll show in a minute, you do have to then, portal is where you actually will set up the first admin password and account for Office 365. So there's integration between those two experiences, and I have some screenshots in a few minutes for that. And then we're just going over what we'll do on Microsoft's side, which is creating the tenant. Make sure that you're enrolled for the Exchange Online plan. Like I said, we don't automatically enroll you in the A2 plan. We enroll you in the Exchange Online. Then you have to go in and enroll in the A2. They're both free, but that's the way it works. And then you have to assign your users so that the licenses so that they actually we'll do that for those of you that are already on Live at EDU. And then we copy all the tenants, users, and data over. It's kind of it's an in-place copy, really. It's more of a flipping the switch. And then, to get to your question, how we're going to decouple the Live IDs and the Cloud IDs. So we'll talk a little bit about how that works. So today, of course, you have your Live at EDU account, and you're actually managing your users' live accounts, right? The Microsoft accounts, live accounts, whatever you want to call them. You're actually managing those through your SMP portal. And the users can get their, you might have enabled SkyDrive as well, for example, and they have their documents. And so what happens now with this decoupling is we're actually going to split and stop allowing you to manage the live IDs. And the live IDs will stay in place with the same passwords. And so they will have a live ID with your university's name, but it will not be associated with your domain space. It's just like you today, you could go and create a live ID with just about any other email addresses, except for in these cases where you've reserved it right through for education. But we're going to completely split that off. So the user will have two separate accounts. This also means that any SkyDrive documents that they might have, those documents will still be there for them in their SkyDrive account, but only they will have access to it. You will no longer have the ability to, say, reset their password or deprovision the account. It will be just become a standard live account that the user has access to. And then from an org ID standpoint, you're now going to be doing all your management through the org ID, which is the administration portal that I showed you, plus your DirSync server that you'd have set up. Any questions on that? Yep. The live ID won't have anything to do with your university anymore.
It will have an email address associated with the university.
That's right. But it
will be historically reissued because it's much better than packing your numbers on the backboard.
But you could reissue it here in your cloud ID environment.
But if I go to the passport now,
yep.
Knowing that I've reissued that learner X,
right.
His email's moved on to someone else.
Right. Yep, I mean it's their account. So I'm not understanding your issue because now you're managing your accounts through Cloud ID. So the Office 365, their ability to access that is limited to your provisioning them an account and assigning them. Nope, it's not. It's right, and they won't have any email with this old live account. They won't have any email, right? That's correct. It will be the original university address. So you will have to go and deprovision those accounts before you do your upgrade. That's what you'll need to do. You'll need to deprovision those addresses. But you realize that address, right? name@education.edu. Someone could go and create that tomorrow in live as a Microsoft account, and you would have no control over it because it's just a live account. You can set up a live account with any name, right? You can go and create a Gmail, a Yahoo, an education account, and you can set it up, except for people can't do it with your education name because you block the namespace. But after this, they will be able to with on live. Mm-hmm. But once the separation happens, it's just like everyone else. It doesn't matter that someone associates your email account address with a live ID, right? Like they can. So now, for example, let me give you an example. Someone could take their org ID, right? Their org ID, their name at educationinstitution.edu. They could then go and sign up for a new live account. So let's pretend, let's say they didn't have a live account before. They could go take that and still sign up for a live account using your education institution name as the thing. And that's always been possible, right? Except for in the one case you have. So what you'll have to do for those ones that you're concerned about, you'll have to deprovision them beforehand, right? Those accounts. Yep. All right, moving on. So here is just showing for more of the IT administrator experience, just going into, today how you're administering, how you're actually using the PowerShell and Exchange to go into your live at EDU Outlook to actually provision. And today what's interesting, of course, is that it's actually the live at EDU Outlook that actually does the creation of the Windows Live IDs and then provides those services. And then what happens is once you've been migrated is you will no longer have the user management over those Windows Live licenses, which is what we've just been talking about. Instead, you'll use the tools to manage all of your Office 365 cloud IDs. And then from an end user perspective, before the upgrade, they just log in, and this is their Windows Live account, or their Live at EDU account, excuse me. And then notice the password stays the same. They will still have that Windows Live account, but they will only have a SkyDrive and other Windows Live services. There will not be any mail associated with this Live account. And then, of course, they will have their new account in your Office 365 implementation with a different password, org ID, et cetera. And that's where they will have their email associated with your institution. These are all of the upgrade resources. There are a lot of resources. Again, this you don't need to write these down. This is available for download online on Channel 9. But these are all of the resources that are available so you can understand the timeline, what are the things you need to do. So it's my slides, but you know, in three times as much detail around what has to happen for you to be ready for this upgrade. So here we'll just take a look through some of the screenshots that you need. So here we're in the SMP. This is where you want to make sure, I mentioned this earlier, you want to make sure that your information, your contact information, is up to date and accurate. We don't want to have, again, not be able to contact you when we're trying to do your migration. And then, so then the first thing you can do is upgrade your domains. So this is when your it'll take you to the center, and you can actually do an upgrade, and it'll look at how many domains that you actually have registered with the tool. So that'll start the process, and while that's going on, you won't be able to change email addresses. Then you can choose to upgrade your users, and then this will begin the process of moving their mailboxes and flipping that switch. And of course, during this point, users won't be able to access their mailboxes while they're doing the upgrade. This is where you actually will create your first administrator password in Office 365. So this will be for the main administrator account. Then once the upgrade is complete, it will notify you and that your domains, of course, have been upgraded. And then you'll be able to go to the Office 365 page and sign in. You have your new password that you created. You'll sign in there. Here you'll set up your alternate contact information in case your administrator password is ever misplaced. This will allow them to do an auto reset without having to call help desk via either SMS or alternate email. Okay, and this is where you can do some other password administration. Here's where you would go in and then be able to, again, enable your users and set them up, and you can actually get all their you can reset their passwords and actually get the passwords sent to you, which then you're able to give out to the users. This is where then from, like I said, you will be on Exchange Online. If you want to then go to Office 365 and get the additional SharePoint that I demoed and link, this is where you go and you purchase that. Again, it will be a free purchase, but you just have to purchase it, add it to your cart for your users. So I talked through most of those steps. So this is the part around the URL that I had mentioned briefly earlier. Is around right now they can go to outlook.com, but what happens is that address no longer works, and they have to go to outlook.com/your organization. So outlook.com/organization.edu becomes the new address they use to get to your Office 365 resources. Also today in the live experience, there's the co-branding, and they have the SkyDrive, and those will go away. The co-branding is visible in their SkyDrive, as well as the mail button. Then what happens when they go, here you can see the little boxes talking about how you have to add your domain to the address. They'll go and sign in. If you set up a single sign-on, it will actually it will either have already, if they're on a domain joined PC, they won't even get prompted with this, of course. But if they're not, they will then have to actually authenticate against your ADFS implementation. and get the token. So then they would get redirected. While this is, while the upgrade is going on, until it's complete, this is the error they will receive if they try to go to Outlook.com and log in. So they will, the email flow is still active, but they won't be able to access the account. Those are the new URLs to access the email. And you've given them the new password. Then the very first thing when they log in is they'll have to create their own new password. They'll enter that, and then they'll have their Outlook. And the co-branding is gone, and you cannot change that. It always says Office 365 up there. You can't customize that today for email. This is the home screen because they'll have just email at this point. They won't see a team site or SharePoint or link or have the downloads for that. They will just see the mail. And then this is what their live will look like afterwards. They will no longer have the co-branding, and they will have their Hotmail, which temporarily will not work. They will not have any working Hotmail, and it will redirect to the Office 365. But again, they won't be able to log in with it. If you want to have other custom, the custom addresses that you would have had in the admin center no longer work. So that's the main, that's the last thing there around that update. So before I jump into the last section around service updates, any other questions about that upgrade? Yep. Yeah, they are separate. So the students will still be able to access those SkyDrive files with their old account. What? You'll have to log into a separate account. That's right. It's a separate account. Yep. So then service updates. So just for the last few minutes here, I just want to go through, one of the great things about Office 365 is we are able to push out updates. And so we've actually have a nice rhythm where we're able to take customer feedback a lot quicker than we used to be able to in the 3-year development cycle. And we're able to start implementing some of those, identify the top features. And we tend to have updates on a quarterly. Within a given quarter, all the services will get updates. We don't typically see updates, say, to all of the services on the same exact month, right? They're rolled out at different months because, again, the services are run independently. And so that's what enables that. And we also typically have about a 12-month roadmap where we're looking at the new features that are coming out. Here are some of the features that we have shipped since the release of Office 365 a year ago. Things like the ability to look at documents inside of OWA in the web apps. That was one of the most requested features. It's not available on-prem, so it's an example where we're just investing in our cloud services, and we're not backporting that to the on-prem. Then, of course, things like the photos and the Outlook. We've added a lot of support for additional users. When we first started, you could only have about 20,000 objects. Now we support at least 500,000 objects in some of our large-scale implementations, and we can do special things to go higher than that for really, really large organizations. We added things like BlackBerry support for some of the higher-end SKUs, where that's necessary, add support for more browsers. We've added 22 markets, and I think we're even more. I think as of Wednesday, when we had our one-year anniversary, I think we just added a few more markets, too. I think we're up to about 89 countries that we're available in now. Added some new languages. We've gotten a lot of additional compliance and regulatory certifications added on, and we've done a lot around the IT pro efficiency, just being able to add things like the Better Exchange Hybrid Wizard. Exchange Service Pack 2, we added the CAS server role that's specially for the migration. It really makes that a lot easier. So this is the OWA attachment. This is just where you have the attachments in the email, and you can click the open in browser, and we just render that in the web app. Now they can't go right into editing because it's not being stored anywhere, right? It's just being opened from the email. It's not a document storage place where you can write back to. But it does let the user quickly view the documents right from within their web browser. And then they could save it locally and edit it, or they could save it to SharePoint, whatever they want to do there to continue working on it. We added the photos so that you have that nice integration with Link and get their presence. We added external sharing so that this is when you have a SharePoint site and you have a user who needs to edit some documents, but they aren't a user, right? They're not actually affiliated with your university. You're not going to give them an ID. They can still set up an easy ID, which is based on, of course, Windows Live, to then access the documents and edit them with your other users. We improved the PDF support so that now PDF documents that are inside of SharePoint actually are able to, you're able to just view those right inside the browser. You don't have to download them anymore. We added the ability to recover deleted SharePoint sites, always very useful for IT admins when someone calls your help desk and is asking where their content went. At this point, if you're not very familiar with SharePoint, the other thing to know is that there's really, really advanced file saving capabilities and versioning capabilities inside of SharePoint. So if you're worried about that kind of data retention, data loss, there's a lot of different things you can do to make sure that versions are being captured within SharePoint, so that if you're concerned about users losing document versions, et cetera, you can actually build in a lot of help and security around that. The Office web apps have gotten a lot of features, things like better ODF support. The Chrome support wasn't there when it first shipped. Things like being able to print from the editor, so from the web app, if you're in edit mode, you can now print before you had to save it, go back into the viewing mode. Added some ability in Excel, the ability to insert charts. They've added lots more of the equations. And then PowerPoint had a lot of features around printing, themes, inserting clip art, et cetera. And the inserting clip art is really nice because you can actually hit other services, image services, and insert art from other places on the internet right from within the web app. And here we added some control updates for the IT admin and Link online. Also enabled the ability to schedule Link meetings all from within the web browser. So this was a new feature, the Link web scheduler. So you could have that all done within the browser, not using because normally you would use the add-in that plugs into Outlook. So this gives you more features and functionality when you're just using a browser. And I mentioned this troubleshooting tool, but that was something we shipped later on in several languages. And this disability, a lot of our help desk calls ended up being the admins had forgotten their password. So that's why I pointed that out earlier. We added this ability for the alternate self-restore. So with that, I hope we covered the Live at EDU upgrade plan. Showed you how Office 365 gives you even more than what you got with Live at EDU in terms of now the abilities of SharePoint to give you new features for collaboration. And you got to see how we're continually going to add features to the service and continue to make it better and faster as we're running it for you. So thank you very much for coming to the last session of Tech Ed. Thanks for making it through it, guys. And I'll stay here for any more additional questions. Thank you.